Welcome to Nerdstravaganza episode 111, which is an especially lucky episode for reasons you can look up on Google in order to feel smart. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And in this episode, Brian and I will be discussing how difficult it is for us to recapture the magic we experienced in our early days playing MMORPGs. But first, we'll welcome our listeners into our very own virtual world with our weekly Geekly Weekly Roundup. Brian, be my guest. What have you been up to, sir?
Well, as you can probably guess by now, last Thursday, I was at AGS for game night, and I was very excited to play X-Wing miniatures because the new ships were out, and I finally tracked them all down, and, you know, I want to test them out and everything. And just luck of the draw, for whatever reason, like 40 people showed up to play board games. So
on X-Wing night?
It was X-Wing night, and it was the largest turnout we've like ever had, and no one had ever heard of X-Wing before in their lives.
Wow, just like a bunch of new people or what?
I guess something happened and the meetup.com posting really took off. We had, I think, 5 games going.
Wow, that's fantastic. So we just kind of opened it up to general gaming, then.
Yeah, I mean, I played X-Wing with somebody who wanted to play. There was Splendor next to me. There was Lords of Waterdeep up front. There was actually a breakout of Euchre. Some older folks showed up and were like, "What are these weird cards?" And just wanted to play backgammon and bridge.
Okay. You should have introduced him to Deep Six.
Yeah, yeah. And that was it. We just kind of let people do their own thing. It was a pretty full house. Pretty interesting crowd.
So our event, we the Nerdstravaganza podcast, can take credit for kind of filling the Adventure Game Store to the rafters with gamers.
A very fortuitous circumstance. Apparently someone was sick in the D&D crowd, so that was actually canceled, and we just took their table.
Still, that's awesome. I'm glad. The goal was not only to get our kind of name out there in the community, but to drive as much traffic as possible to Brian's store because that's our favorite gaming place. And I'm really kind of jealous that I'm out in Seattle and I wasn't there to experience it.
I'm looking forward to this weekend. I don't really know. I mean, there were too many people for me to actually talk to one-on-one, but I don't know if they're all going to come back or if many of them are coming back, but it looked like everybody had a pretty good time and there were a lot of like kindred spirits there. So I suspect we'll see more people this week. Kind of excited about it.
Fantastic, man. I think at this point we need a game night with the Nerdstravaganza podcast added to the calendar. We're really like major contributors to the community now.
I agree.
So anything else?
Other than that, I started painting some of my Relic Knight Kickstarter set. I got that Kickstarter, and honestly, I was a little disappointed about it. I don't know if I really mentioned that. It was cheap. You know, it is not the kind of game that I'm used to playing, you know, where a figure is $20 each or anything like that. It was definitely a less expensive to get into game, but yeesh, some of the figures I was hoping would be really good were very clearly less expensive than I was expecting. So I lost a little bit of excitement for that. But I finally dove in and I picked out a couple of my favorite figures to get started on, and they're pretty good. I'm not really unhappy with these. I wouldn't say every single figure is awesome, but the ones that I picked out, they're definitely quality, and they're going to look great once they're all painted up and everything. So it kind of reignited my excitement a little bit.
That's excellent. I'm still waiting for my stuff. I haven't received a notification from them yet, so I don't know if it's because I was a later pleasure or what, but I hope I have nothing to worry about.
I try to be pretty supportive, but this Kickstarter in general is troubled. There's a lot of people who haven't gotten their pieces yet, and a lot of people who have gotten mispacks galore. I had a few mispacks myself where I was missing pieces and missing entire sets and things. And it looks like they're actually going to have the game in retail before some people even get their super duper early Kickstarter campaign contributions, which I think is pretty much the lamest thing you can do for a Kickstarter. So it has some problems, but apparently overall quality is not one of them. I have to take that back because the Black Diamond stuff looks pretty cool.
Well, it's a shame that it is not going smoothly. I understand it was a pretty big Kickstarter, so there's obviously some logistical hurdles to traverse. I hope that I am not one of the people lost in the shuffle. It's a little worrying that my stuff hasn't arrived yet. Of course, I'm not in Florida to receive it. My neighbor's going to have to take it in for me, or you're going to have to intercept it. So to add to the complexity of this, I may enlist you to pick up my Relic Knight stuff should it ever ship. And I'm a little dismayed to hear that the quality is not quite there on the figures, but I guess we're used to a higher quality figure. I don't know.
Well, I mean, yeah, I am used to a higher quality figure. Something nice for War Machine, for instance, would be about $750, $10 for your average, like, guy in armor. And I think we wound up paying, like, 50 cents per figure for the Kickstarter. So definitely a price difference, which makes the quality difference understandable. But I was just not quite expecting some of the quality difference that there is. The human figures, I was really excited about the wizards. They're called Doctrine, and they're basically Harry Potter. They're wizards and wizardesses and dementors, and apparently all of the detail on them needs to be painted on, which is super hard. Whereas what I was talking about earlier, Black Diamond, is like giant mecha suits and tanks and things like that. So there's a lot of detail on them, the bigger stuff.
Interesting. So is this reflective of what's going to be on the shelf? Meaning, are Kickstarter pledgers getting the early retail run stuff, or are they going to like do a different run for retail?
No, it's actually kind of one of the things that's causing a little bit of discomfort is it is the exact same thing. I got retail boxes in my Kickstarter pledge.
Wow. So you're getting the box product. Okay. Well, I guess not everything can be perfect, and the stuff was had at a fairly cheap price. I'm assuming this stuff is priced very competitively in the boxed sense as well, or no?
I don't know about that. I haven't seen the final retail prices yet. It is clearly a cheaper alternative, so it's not necessarily $50 to get into it or $100 to get into it or anything like that, but I wouldn't call it cheap. It's not like $20 to get into it like some lower quality games.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll enlist you to paint all my stuff for me. That way you can do all that detail work for me if it ever shows up. Okay, a great report from our Nerdtravaganza weekly gaming event. Mixed review on Relic Knights. That pretty much it.
That's my week.
I'm glad you had an in-depth roundup because mine is fairly rapid fire. Finished reading a book called Hollow World, which is sort of a crime novel set in Walt Disney World. That was neat. Our friend Rick recommended that, and I had a good time reading that. It was a very easy read, which is refreshing. I think I'm going to dig into something with a little more substance now that I've kind of wet my appetite for reading again. Making good progress in Kingdom Hearts HD Remix on the PS3, and still playing more Disney Magical World on the 3DS. Kind of static. I haven't been doing a lot of new stuff, mainly though because I am hard at work upgrading our website to a nicer WordPress design that we came up with, or rather that we adapted to suit our tastes. And hopefully we'll be rolling that out soon. So big news on the Nerdtravaganza front. And I know we're both excited about that. I know Eric is too. And when he recovers from his grave illness, I'm sure he will celebrate the launch of our new website with us.
Yeah, I actually am pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's hopefully only the beginning of exciting things happening in the Nerdtravaganzaverse. So I guess with all that said, let's get on to tonight's topic. So, Brian, I wanted to bring up a topic I know is near and dear to our hearts, or at least has been in the past. And I know we've talked about it on the show in the past here and there, but I wanted to kind of devote an episode to it because I think you and I have kind of been down this road together, going all the way back to our young adulthood. I am, of course, talking about the massively multiplayer online role-playing game, the MMORPG. A type of game, I think, that has, in a lot of ways, run its course. I mean, it's evolved from something people were willing to pay for to something people will play for free and will pay for if there's something really cool that they view. And maybe run its course isn't fair, but we'll get into that in a minute. So I guess to start off, let's talk about EverQuest. I mean, you remember our early days with that, I assume.
Oh, yeah, etched into my memory.
Right, etched is right. It was really profound. Like, it was a new type of gaming experience, right?
Yeah, it was unlike anything. Like, I almost couldn't process it all. And I was almost 20 years old. It wasn't like I was a, you know, kid trying to figure it out.
Right, and I remember when I saw EverQuest at your house... I'd come over and you had all your electronic equipment set up. You'd basically just done a whole hardware refresh on your house. So you'd had a new computer, new this and that. And you basically had plugged the computer into the TV you were going to be playing it on.
Funny story, just to show everyone the severity of EverQuest. Not a new computer. My first real computer. I had had like a piece of shit, like 10-year-old Apple IIe for schoolwork before that. But that was my first real Windows, like, can-run-a-game computer.
Okay, so such was your commitment to playing this game. I guess there was a lot of hype. Had one of our mutual friends introduced you to it already, and you kind of were already determined to play, or...?
Well, working at... Then it was called Babbage's. Everyone had just come back from the manager's meeting. It's kind of like a little mini CES just for Babbage's employees. And everyone had seen... EverQuest at the show, played by what was it back then? Verant,
yes.
Verant employees, and they had been pitched and everything, and a lot of them had actually been given beta access, and they were all excited about it.
Okay, so you were at this show for Babbage's, kind of a predecessor to today's GameStop, but like one of the companies that was folded into GameStop eventually, but we don't need to get into that history. And, okay, that's right. Now I remember, because you and a mutual friend of ours who was also a manager, I remember you guys were totally psyched about it because that's where you'd seen it.
Uh-huh.
And so I come over to your house, and you've got this whole hardware refresh, this brand-new computer, brand-new, at the time, state-of-the-art Sony, was it, what was the computer? Or what was
a Wega.
Yeah, a Sony Vega, however you pronounce that. That awesome TV that could actually display a computer display on it. Pretty state-of-the-art. And you had all this stuff unpacked, but just kind of like stuck in the middle of your room amidst all the boxes it came in. You unpacked everything, plugged it in, and got things up and running and the game installed as fast as you could. And you and this mutual friend of ours are sitting there, who, by the way, is not in the witness protection program, but I don't want to take liberties of mentioning people who we haven't gotten a clearance from.
Yeah, we couldn't get his legal forms.
Right. So there you guys are. Just like sitting cross-legged in front of the TV in the middle of the room and it's all these boxes and you had just installed the game and I walk in, I'm like, what are you guys doing? And as soon as I see this, I'm like, what is this? Because you're in first person view and you're in this world and it was like nothing I'd ever seen. I mean, I'd seen 3D games at that point, but this was you playing a character in an actual world. And I don't know what it was about the game that grabbed me. Like, right away, I think it was because you guys were, like, comparing notes on where you were and where you thought other things were. And it dawned on me that you were entering this brand-new, completely uncharted world. And that was just like, wow, that grabbed me almost right away.
I always hoped it would be like playing with a Dungeon Master. Like, this is Dungeons & Dragons, but you get to see it, you don't need the imagination, and you don't have to agree on this and everything like that. And the computer games for you. And it was.
Truly, it was. I mean, you had the NPCs, you had the setting described for you graphically, and this world was yours to do with as you wished. Now, that perception was our early perception. As we got more into the game, we realized, of course, that it was governed by rules, and there were certain repeatable patterns of play that were going to come around, you know, combat and that sort of thing. But at least initially, it seemed like you opened this wide open world of possibilities by entering EverQuest's world of Norrath. And I have to say, so for my part, I rushed out and actually bought, wow, now that I think about it, rushed out and bought an adequate PC myself so that I could get this game. And wow, I didn't even think about that. I bought my PC specifically to play this stupid game. I didn't even realize that.
You're not alone.
And started playing EverQuest and was completely just sucked in. Like, I missed most of the PlayStation 2's early life cycle and the demise of the Dreamcast thanks to EverQuest. And it was because I had this huge world in which I basically lived and I could explore. And I can't underscore enough how much the fact that there were no maps for the game added to the mystery and to the level of really just pull the game had for me. Do you agree? I mean, was it not cool to basically just explore this world that was not in any way mapped?
One of the things that I really didn't appreciate at the time, because it made things so much harder, but I think is really brilliant in retrospect. Once upon a time, the game had a vision, and they were preparing for that vision. So they made all of these cool maps for everything that they thought they would do. And those are the maps that made it into the retail box. Like, ooh, this collector's edition cloth map so that you can pull it out of your desk and look at it as you walk across Norrath. But in reality, half that shit got cut. So I remember being level 3, walking through the Karanas, checking that map. I don't see the Dagger Spine Mountains anywhere. We must not be where we think we are. When in reality, they just didn't exist. I mean, they were supposed to, but
that was actually kind of cool because, of course, inaccurate maps have been drawn in the past and have probably led travelers astray. So it was kind of part of the unofficial lore in a way, wasn't it?
That's great, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So to talk about exploration, there was no map. There was no auto-mapping feature, which is something people take for granted nowadays in MMORPGs. And so you were at the mercy of looking for landmarks and using the /loc command, which gave you your Cartesian coordinates in the particular zone you were in. And that was how you kind of gave people hints as to where to go. Hey, a certain monster is spotted near this location, or hey, I'm over here, come meet me. And man, I got really good at, I think you could just do kind of a Unix style shift up key or something like that to repeat the same command. And I would just do loc, 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 loc. And I had like a steady stream of coordinates as I was walking to know I was going in the right direction.
And again, you just can't appreciate it when you're playing the game. But looking back, that was a player skill that made the game much easier. Like, I remember meeting people, where are you? I'm by that big tree near the mountain. And it would take 3 hours to find them because there's a lot of trees and a lot of mountains. But sometimes you'd meet someone, hey, where are you? Neg 27, pause 31. Be right there!
Yep. And they would know. They would know. They knew what was up with Loc. That was the elite players that figured that out almost right away. Now, it was in the rule book, but I don't think it dawned on a lot of people to use it right away. And once we discovered it, it was like we had discovered, like, wow, this special sauce for getting around this world. And I should mention, I said we used Loc to find our way, and we did. But the game creators weren't without any foresight. They did have a built-in sense direction command, which failed a lot until you mastered it, where it would report, you think you're facing north, you think you're facing east, you think you're facing south, you think you're facing... And eventually, as you got better, it would more consistently point you in the direction you were actually facing.
This is a great example of just how punitive EverQuest was at first. Because a lot of people have heard that EverQuest was difficult, and it was supposed to be difficult. And I'm sure you've all heard that death is supposed to be inconvenient. Customer service line.
Yes.
But
This is a great example of just how bad it was. Their reasoning was a level one character, you know, a ranger just starting out in the wilderness would not have honed instincts. So you would have to press a button to hone those instincts to know where north, east, south, west was.
Yes, obviously you would have to practice at getting your bearings in order to get your bearings.
And speaking again of the elite players, there's real world examples where the sun sets in the east and rises in the west, or I know that's not right, I'm teasing. Moss always grows on the north side of trees. Well, it was easier for people to carry around an extra sword and throw it on the ground than it was for them to train their sense direction, because swords dropped on the ground always pointed north.
The default orientation was north-south.
Well, the blade was north, so the hilt was south, so you knew exactly where you were.
Oh, that's brilliant. I remember that now that you mention it. Holy cow. How clever are people?
It was easier to be clever and adapt to their world than it was to actually play by their rules.
Yeah, and you mentioned that customer service line. One of the moderators in the forums, who may have been the senior software architect at the time, you know, when EverQuest was young, who knows, famously wrote, when people mentioned that dying was way too punitive, that death is supposed to be inconvenient, which, you know, those of us who thought we were badass kind of agreed with. But in truth, death in that game really sucked. Your soul would be bound to a certain town, basically. And if you had gone through five or six zones to adventure wherever you're going to adventure and you died, you now had to traverse those same zones from the town where you respawned back into the hostile area where you died with no equipment, right? Because you're naked, to retrieve your corpse. And if you didn't retrieve your corpse, Brian, what happened to it?
I think originally it was if you did not recover it within 3 hours, it just disappeared forever.
That's awful. If you didn't find your stuff, you could lose all your stuff. And stuff was not easy to come by. Remember, we were forever making our way through the world of Norrath, but just like whatever like augments of armor we happened to loot off of enemies, right?
Yeah, bronze armor and ringmail, just whatever piece came to us.
Gosh, I mean, it was in that respect, it was realistic. These people with no resources going around just with like piecemeal armor. I these are things I didn't appreciate at the time, but it kind of added to it, at least adds to the nostalgia, even if it didn't truly add to the magic at the time. But wow, there we were, piecemeal armor, making our way lost through this world, and travel, at least in the early days, was perilous. When we were low level, especially, we wanted to get from our human domain of Kainos to the island of Faedwyr, where the elves dwelt. And so we set out on foot at what were we, like level 10? We thought we were like badasses.
Yeah, I think we were either like 9, 10, 11, right around that range.
So we're in the double digits. We've got a pretty decent assortment of leather and bronze armor. We're doing pretty well. And so we set off at night across the plains of Karana, making our way towards the, I guess it was western, I don't really remember, but on the opposite coast of the main continent was another human city called Freeport. From there you could take a ship to Faedwyr, to this land of the Fey people. So there we are, torches in hand. We didn't have any infravision because we're humans, making our way across the plains of Karana, and we stick to the roads because we think that's safe. But of course, there's all sorts of scary things like griffins and cyclopses, if that's the plural, and giants stomping around, and we're horrified. So we decide, you know what? Let's wait until morning. Hey, there's a farmhouse over there. Let's go take refuge in there until morning. We should be safe. Or so we thought. Brian, I'll let you take this one.
Again, one of the things I liked so much about the game was why everything was. And once upon a time, they had this great idea that being a 3D world, things would matter. There would be a building here, and the walls would matter. There's a door. You walk in through the door, and no one can get you through the walls or anything like that. Well, apparently that was inconvenient to code.
So they just dropped graphics down. What looked like a house was a wide open plain for the mobs. So things like lions could just stick their paw through the door and whack at you as you try to cower against a campfire.
And so it came to pass that on a starry night, let me set it better because it might not have been sorry. And so it came to pass that on a stormy night. Oh, that's right. It was always stormy because they didn't know how to turn the rain off on the plains of Karana, right?
Yeah. It was just, I think it was.
It was a glitch in the game and they couldn't turn off the rain for like the first 3 months of that game, wasn't it?
Or something like that. Like they had meant to include actual weather, but it just got stuck on somehow.
Okay, so in what was in all likelihood a stormy night on the plains of Karana, there we were, huddled in this farmer's house. My back is to the fireplace. My companions are sitting, you know, in a circle with me, and we're just chatting about what we're going to do when we pass through the High Pass Hold, which is this mountain pass you have to pass through in order to get to the part of the continent where Freeport is. And as we're strategizing, we get a pretty memorable demonstration of the complete lack of meaning behind walls when a creature that we have forever since then affectionately called Santa Lion decided to reach through the fireplace and start clawing at my back.
Like half his head and one claw. That was all he needed.
And it's a wonder we survived the encounter. I might have died and had to come back. I don't even remember. But it's a wonder we survived as a party because we were too busy dying laughing.
Yeah, I think a few of us did not survive that encounter. I don't remember if it was you or not, but we definitely had to wait for people to catch back up.
That was pretty bad. So set...
Mainly because the wall only acted one way. We couldn't attack him back until he poked his claw through.
Right. He could target us freely through walls, but we could not target him. So Santa Lion did a few of us in, but we got on our way. We eventually, I think, did make it to Freeport. Or no, we didn't make it to Freeport because we got stomped by like a giant or a cyclops or something on the way. And so we just decided to roll up elf characters in Fadewear, thus reaching that island through alternative means, I guess, right?
Yep. Not playing by their rules again.
I will say that I did, in my stubbornness, I leveled up a couple more times and did try to make a solo journey. Like, I'll roll my elf character, but I'm going to give, my human character is going to meet him in Fadewear and give him all this equipment that I got, because I'm like level 12 and I have a lot of stuff. I ended up, and this is going to sound awful and I hate to be offensive, so warning, triggering language about to commence. My character was prison raped in the jail cells of High Pass Hold, and the guards let it happen.
High Pass was not a safe city.
It was pretty awful. It was this city where the guards were kind of indifferent to me. I guess they hadn't really coded the NPCs. They would just like say nothing to you and stand there. And so I'm walking around exploring this place, and I go into this underground prison, and what appears to be a beggar, there were these generic beggars who would recite over and over, "Might I have some coppers, please? Might I have some coppers, please?" They were found all over in all the squalid places of Norath. Well, there were a couple of them in jail. I'm like, oh, look at that. They locked up the beggars. Poor beggars. Well, here, let me see if I can give him some copper. He didn't want copper. Of course, not respecting physics, he came bursting through the bars of his cell and proceeded to annihilate my character while the guards looked on. Horrible.
A lot of rules only went one way in that game.
Very much so, very much so. But, you know, for all that, for all the zaniness, and we could get into several other stories. In fact, let's.
I'll take one. So it may sound improbable that the hill giant that ended our journey across the Karanas managed to sneak up on us somehow. Does anyone remember how?
Wait, it wasn't when we were, like, on a ship, was it?
No.
Okay, go on.
Our navigator had gone AFK to look at that fucking cloth map.
So as our appointed navigator was looking at his inaccurate cloth map, we got attacked by that stupid giant?
Yup.
I thought you were going to mention that, like, he had telegraphed his friend in the sea I don't remember what ocean passage it was, but we got attacked from the bottom of the sea by a giant through the through the hull of a ship and killed that way, remember?
Yeah, that was much later.
Oh, God.
They call it the Ocean of Tears for nothing.
The Ocean of Tears was amazing. It was so aptly named because not only would giants just, like, who didn't respect, like, any kind of Z-axis or range or the hulls of ships kill you as you were crossing, but when the boat zoned, because you would ride this boat and then it would go through a zone, and it wasn't this, like, seamless kind of world. I mean, you would have these, like, breaking points where the next zone would load up. Invariably, about 30% of the passengers wouldn't zone through with the boat. So you'd be just, like, stuck in the middle of the ocean until your stamina ran out and you drown. Or I learned to just swim in a circle until the boat came back through, and then you could sometimes glitch back onto the boat and then make it back to shore that way.
Right. If the boat managed to run you over, since the physics didn't matter, instead of being in the water, you would just magically appear in the hull.
Oh, gosh. All right, one final story, and this is related more to, I guess, the way the NPCs pathed than the way the physics worked. This might have been before our ill-fated journey across the plains of Karana, but I don't really remember. But we were in this nest of gnolls known as Blackburrow. It was there, and we were, of course, pretty badass. We were somewhat deep within Blackburrow. We'd found a good camping spot from which we could pull enemies and hold it down for quite a while. And we're kicking ass. We're leveling up. We're doing fairly well, such as leveling up when in that game, which was painfully slow, I'll remind everybody. And we decide to get a little adventurous. And so somebody's like, hey, see if we can hit that knoll up there on that ridge. Okay. So I try to shoot him with my bow, and of course, the physics work in that case, and nope, he's not in line of sight, can't hit him. So one of the other people had a blindness spell, right? And called Flash of Light. Actually, was it maybe me that had the Flash of Light spell because I was playing my paladin at that point? I don't recall. But someone attempted with a bow and arrow, no good. So somebody else decides to cast Flash of Light, which will get a mob to come chasing after you. So we cast that spell, pulling, here comes the monster. You see the spell take effect, there's a burst of light around the creature's head, and then it goes taking off. And so we're standing at sort of the end of this ramp that he's going to come down, and we're a little further back from the end of the ramp, because there was another barbarian group at the base of the ramp. Rivercaster and friends, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Well, we were introduced firsthand to unintended trains, as this creature didn't just come running down to fight us. I chalk it up to maybe the fact that he was blinded by the spell, but he proceeded to run around Blackburrow and gather every single one of his friends in there, so that one minute we were standing there, geez, he sure has taken a while, I wonder where he went, he must have glitched. And then the next minute we were just laughing hysterically as a tide of just null blue came pouring down this ramp and it just completely destroyed us and everybody else in the zone, right?
And everyone in the zone, yeah. No, there were no characters high enough level to deal with that yet.
People died where they sat. Like, the three barbarians were, like, in a circle, in a protective, like, semicircle up against the wall, I should say. Where they sat is where they died. Our characters were just neatly lined up in our, like, battle stance, waiting for this wave to come at us. And in the fairly epic corpse retrieval operation that followed, it was just a trail of bodies from the entrance of that zone all the way down to where we were. Like, our spot was definitely the epicenter of that particular zone wipe. And of course, trains will not be unfamiliar to players of MMORPGs, but I like to think that they are never quite as crazy as they were in EverQuest because monster placement and pathing is probably a bit more refined these days. I don't know. What do you think about that, Brian?
Well, the whole, like, concept of tethering, like, there was none of that in EverQuest. Like, monsters almost never protected an area. They hunted you across the world until they killed you.
They told you that in the rulebook, too. Once you engage in combat, it didn't end until one of you died. The monster would never stop hating you. You never lost aggro unless you zoned. Oh, my God. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, brutal. And as our MMORPGs became more refined, especially when World of Warcraft came out, it was significantly more forgiving. The physics was much better realized. I mean, I don't think I'm alone when I say that World of Warcraft was a much softer experience. Right, Brian?
Yeah, I think softer is the word for it. Definitely wasn't easy, at least in its original vanilla... It's a fucking word.
Incarnation,
thank you. At least it's in its original vanilla incarnation, but much easier than EverQuest.
Just not as punishing. Not, you know, the game had a challenge and you could definitely die, but the days of like running naked through the wilderness, finding your corpse were over. They had those little angel, whatever those things called. God, I can't believe I don't even remember the World of Warcraft details. Where you would...
Spirit healers?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, just something like that showed that the people who developed World of Warcraft looked at games like EverQuest and were like, okay, this was a little harsh. And they made a game that was a lot less punishing and in a lot of ways a lot more gratifying. The downside being that while a lot of people spent their entire career playing EverQuest and never reached the maximum level, people reached the maximum level in World of Warcraft relatively quickly. And so I'm no game designer, but from a design standpoint, I suppose that means that you now are under pressure to release expansion content much sooner than the creators of EverQuest were.
Well, I think that's one of the things that made later games feel less like playing Dungeons & Dragons, because in EverQuest, there were things that you could do at almost any level. And in Warcraft, it very quickly became a race to the top where you could raid.
Right. End game was the end in and of itself, right?
Right, because you'd be, you know, level 1 through 59 for 2 weeks, and then 60 forever.
Right. Whereas with EverQuest, you a lot of players, myself included, never saw that level cap, so...
Right. I mean, we played these games a lot, and I was very rarely ever max level, and never actually, like, top tier. Like, they called alternate advancement. And, dude, I had, like, 10, and I was thrilled, and people had, like, hundreds.
Right, so instead of levels, you could pump your experience into these other attributes that would make your character stronger. And, yeah, EverQuest, I mean, for the hardcore players that stuck with it, there seemed to be no end of advancement in that game. But even years later, when they toned down, like, the punitive aspects of it, still, by no stretch, and I would... guess today, still by no stretch an easy game or a trivial game to play. Like I really think somebody who has basically been raised on World of Warcraft would enter EverQuest and would react with some surprise at the game's level of rigor. Although maybe they totally nerfed it by now. I don't know.
The only thing that I will say, because I do go back every once in a while and I continue playing, the only thing that I will say about ease is if anyone tells you what to do, all you have to do is hire a mercenary and let him level you, because the mercenaries are really powerful. And like, you hire a warrior mercenary and just go kill shit. Like, he can just take care of it. All you have to do is like be near him.
Okay. So their solution to a game that was a pretty challenging game was to create an NPC companion that just played it for you.
Which, unfortunately, means they basically joined the race to 60, because now, you know, you use him to get towards the end game and then you start playing.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if I want to go back to EverQuest and I don't know, I think I might have gotten my paladin up to some respectable level, but probably nowhere near whatever the cap is. I could hire NPCs and they could help me get there.
Yeah, basically do it for you.
I don't know. I almost don't want to fault whoever, is it Sony now that runs EverQuest, because they're competing with a pretty crowded field of games now where people want to be rewarded. They're playing to be rewarded. They're playing to advance. They're playing to feel successful, not to feel under constant threat. And like every small scrap of armor found is in and of itself a victory, which is what EverQuest delivered in the early days.
Calling it fault's a good example. I will continue that with some numbers. Do you remember how many servers EverQuest had
the like in originally?
I can't recall.
5 servers.
Okay.
Do you remember when they actually displayed server population? How many people per night were on, roughly?
It was in the low thousands, maybe?
1,000 to 2,000. So let's call it 2,000, 5 servers, 10,000 people playing at any time.
Yeah.
What was Warcraft's peak?
Oh, God, it was like 8 million.
I think it was 13 million.
My God. Yeah, I think EverQuest boasted that they were approaching... Weren't they approaching 1 million subscribers? Granted, those people wouldn't all be playing at once, but weren't they at their peak getting close to 1 million?
I don't think so, honestly. I think the biggest number I ever heard associated with them was like 300,000.
Wow, wow.
I think so, it was 300,000 existing accounts, which means, you know, well, first off, everybody played 6 accounts.
Yeah, well, especially in the latter days, yeah, yeah. So that's surprising to me. So let's talk about this, and then we'll kind of, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about kind of present MMORPGs and what we are hoping for in the future. Our transition from EverQuest to World of Warcraft was in certain ways jarring because what I expected, and I think you also expected, was that we were just going to find all of our old friends from EverQuest playing World of Warcraft, and that was about it. But instead, what we found is that like maybe 1 in 10 players had migrated over from EverQuest, and everybody else had migrated over from...
Quake. What?
Quake, yes. World of Warcraft was just the next PC game. It wasn't a game for role players. It wasn't a game for people into fantasy. It was just, Quake was fun. Now it's time for this, and then we'll go on to Team Fortress, right?
What's the clan playing next?
Yeah, and that was a foreign concept to me. Like, we were not really hardcore PC gamers prior to this. EverQuest really kind of sucked us into what at the time was modern PC gaming. And the concept that you would come in as a clan and this was the latest thing to play before you moved on was just struck me as bizarre. And so I would make jokes like in out of character chat, like, oh, look out, you know, and I would make some kind of EverQuest reference and I would get a couple of ha-has and then I would get, I don't get it. What does that mean? What? Huh? What? And I would ask people, well, you know, from EverQuest. Oh, no, I never played that. I was playing Quake before this. I was playing some World War II online game. You know, I wasn't playing this, or I wasn't playing EverQuest. And that kind of blew my mind. What about you?
I remember, I think it was you, actually, making a gauntlet joke. And, like, 4 deaf ears. What? What's gauntlet? And I was just like, wow, this is seriously another world. Like, these people just don't get, like, why are they here? I don't understand it.
Right. I made a very basic gauntlet, like, I need food badly, or some such thing, right?
Yeah, and then everyone jumped down your throat. Whoa, why do you make the mage summon food? You're supposed to bring your own.
I was kidding. Right. And they didn't get the reference. It was said as a joke, and they didn't get the reference. And so, of course, this was early 2000. This is before nerd culture became what it is today, I hate to say. I mean, gosh, that seems like so recent, but what a change there has been since then. I think nowadays more people might get that joke just because of memes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so not because they actually played Gauntlet. Right, so I made a Gauntlet joke, a classic Gauntlet joke about the warrior needing food badly, and they jumped down my throat about forcing somebody to summon me food. Oh, God. I didn't even remember that. Did you have you had expendable food and drink in WoW in the early days?
Well, it was not even in the early days. It was always something like to recover your health and mana while you, instead of meditating.
Right. Right. But it wasn't EverQuest style where you had to have food
to survive.
Yes, or you would start taking damage. Oh my God, that game was
you're too tired to run. Oh, great.
Oh, God, that's right. You would like move. Oh, you were dying of thirst. You were dying of thirst. Oh God. So we made the transition over to World of Warcraft. I played for a while. You played for a lot longer, Brian, and I know you were very into the game. Like, you were a dedicated player. But I'll just speak for myself, and then I'll get your opinion. World of Warcraft never captured me. At that point, I had been an EverQuest addict. I was addicted to what was called Evercrack, and there was no other drug that could hook me like EverQuest had. So I played World of Warcraft. I enjoy World of Warcraft. But when I was done with World of Warcraft, I just walked away, and it wasn't the huge part of my life that EverQuest was. It wasn't the grade point average altering factor in my life that EverQuest was.
I didn't necessarily want to leave EverQuest. I left because my friends left. So I wanted to play with my friends more than I wanted to play EverQuest. And everybody went to Warcraft, and I went to Warcraft with him. And it was good. It was kind of the only thing to do, so I played a lot. But no, it never captured my imagination the way EverQuest did. And especially because of that whole Dungeons & Dragons feel. Because it always felt very linear. Go here, do this. This is what you're supposed to do. Whereas EverQuest was, I don't care. It's your game. I mean, you want to stay in town and make pots until you're level 50 pottery? Go right ahead. You never have to even kill a snake.
That's true. I mean, not to diminish the degree to which combat was fairly prominent in EverQuest, but WoW definitely felt a little more on guide rails, you know?
One of my richest characters in EverQuest, and I mean rich to me, like, I mean, I had millions of platinum at the time, was a level 3 warrior. She killed things that attacked her on the way to the bazaar, and once she got to the bazaar, she stayed there forever.
You mean the unofficial bazaar, right?
Well, once upon a time, yeah, it was a unofficial bazaar, and then they actually finally added that zone.
Oh gosh, that was another thing about EverQuest. People found this relatively safe area in a cave that went between two zones in the desert near Freeport, and that became the bazaar zone. And that's where you would go, and that's where you would buy and sell. It was just a stream of text as these items would go up for sale. It was literally like just an improvised bazaar. It was really great.
I've probably told this story before. I will definitely tell it again. We were on Kazakh Thule's server, and for whatever reason, our community chose the tunnels for ease. They were kind of in the middle of the world, and for safety, because basically none of the monsters came in the tunnel. But a lot of other servers chose one of the areas outside of the elven town called Greater
Faedark.
Yes, thank you. And I was always slightly jealous of those servers because they nicknamed their bazaar Faemart.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's great, isn't it? I always, we missed out.
But how inconvenient for people from the main continent to have to go all the way to Faemart to do their buying and selling.
Wizard Spires, they were right there. You just hire somebody to teleport you.
Who were these rich people who could afford wizards for teleportation, who could afford to pay druids to sow them, who could afford to pay magic users to bind to their soul somewhere geographically close to where they were adventuring? Like, I was always broke in that game.
It was rough. They were mostly magicians because the pet class is just unfair advantage.
Oh, God, yes. The class balance was horrendous in EverQuest. I stubbornly insisted on playing a melee character, and that was probably the worst choice you could make if you wanted to have any kind of soloing ability or survivability outside a carefully balanced group. The class balance, people complain about it in World of Warcraft, but I've never played a class and felt like, wow, this is totally underpowered. Like, you can... In PvP, it's a different matter, but as far as wanting to solo or be in a group, you can survive in World of Warcraft, you know?
So, I'm sure you've heard of the concept of the Holy Trinity.
Yes.
What is the Holy Trinity in relation to MMOs? Obviously not religious.
Well, you've got your tank out front, and you've got your nuker, and you've got your healer, right?
Right. That's what it evolved into. The Holy Trinity was originally not a tank. It was a warrior. Not a healer. It was a cleric. And it actually wasn't DPS. It was a enchanter, because you had to have crowd control. So the original Holy Trinity was three classes out of, I think it was 16. And if you were one of the other 13 classes, fuck you.
It was like pretty much like, it was parties of six, was it not, in EverQuest?
Yes.
And I would go begging. I would spend hours begging for a group. And I was a paladin, so they're, I mean, he won't hurt anything, but if there's a warrior that needs a group, we'll definitely take him. And not only that, I wanted to be an elf. I didn't want to be, like, some other race, so I was a weak paladin at that. It really sucked. But the Holy Trinity took on a more flexible configuration in World of Warcraft, right?
In everything to come, yeah. That was ridiculous.
I don't know. I guess that's an improvement in that you have some flexibility to play the type of class you want and can still be useful in a group. But at the same time, haven't you kind of lost whatever it might be that makes your class special? I mean, in the case of EverQuest, no, because nothing made the paladin special.
They came to dependence with individuality much later in the game. And I thought they did a pretty good job of it eventually, because paladins could tank eventually because of how well they could heal themselves. And Shadow Knights could tank eventually because of how much extra damage they did, so they could kill the thing off sooner. And, like, it was definitely different, but 10 years after they launched it, it evened out.
It did, and as you said, things to come addressed a lot of the shortcomings of EverQuest. And I think that these days, where there are a lot of MMORPGs out there, many of which are free to play, a lot of the gripes from early players have probably been addressed. So mechanically, many of them are sound. But what is it, man? We have been searching for one, and we can never seem to settle on one that we want to play for any length of time. Is it that we're burnt out? Is it that they're not offering us that next level of immersion and the next level of high that we would want from a game? Like, what's staying our hand? What's keeping us from playing an MMORPG these days?
For me, I'll use Rift as an example, because I really liked Rift, but there was always something, like, just in the back of my head that was like, this is good, but this isn't great, and a lot of things really felt familiar, and it was a good balance. It was difficult, and you needed class interdependency, but there was so much that each class could do, it didn't really alienate anybody. Like, I was actually a thief who could tank, just because I had such avoidance that I never got hit, so it was, like, okay for me to tank, whereas the warriors would get hit, but just absorb the damage so they could tank. Like, it was kind of neat, but what finally killed it for me was people were talking about how familiar it is, and they just straight up licensed Warcraft's engine.
Oh, wow. So I remember you telling me about this. So it was just noticeably derivative of World of Warcraft?
Well, I hate to use this word because it's kind of derogatory. And like I said, I did like the game, but it was a WoW clone, literally.
Why did Blizzard allow that sort of licensing of their engine? I mean, were they not, like, completely awash in money and sitting pretty at the top of the heap at that point?
I don't think they developed the WoW engine. I might be wrong on that, but I don't think it was actually them. I think they had purchased a well-known functioning engine from a third party.
I see. So the similarities were in the underlying software, not in the implementation.
Right. Like, all the rules felt the same. And there were some things that you could do, like the tethering and the aggro range and all that kind of stuff. Like, there was no learning curve. You're like, just this, like, I know this for some reason.
Sure, and you know it because it's part and parcel of the foundation of World of Warcraft. Okay, interesting. I know you've told me this before, and now that makes a lot more sense. So one sort of ding against playing an MMORPG today is, I'm sure Rift isn't alone in at least feeling derivative, whether it is or is not technically derivative.
Even if it's not straight up a clone, yeah, we've done so much of it that, like, almost everything feels derivative.
Right. At this point, an MMORPG is a known concept. There's really nothing you can throw my way that's going to excite me. The PvP stuff has become fairly refined in a lot of the games. That's fun to an extent, but if I'm going to play PvP, I'm more kind of just wanting to play a shooter at that point. And so far, no game, although there are some in the future that are claiming to offer this, has offered the feeling of truly living and existing and doing what I want in a world. We say EverQuest offered that, and to an extent it did, and for a while it did. But after a while, even EverQuest got to feel like, you know, there's only so many modes of existence I can live in this world. I can be out fighting, or I can be doing increasingly unprofitable crafts back in the village. But the notion that I'm living in this dynamic, changing world turns out to be a false notion at the end of the day. And no game has delivered on that, and I feel like that's what I need at this point.
Warcraft initially did a very good job of that. Well, it's not even fair to say initially, because this was, I think, the second expansion that I'm talking about? Second or third, where you basically went to the Frozen North to fight Arthas, and my character was already, I think it was level 60 at the time, and already a badass, and looked really cool and everything. But being the first level of the new expansion, basically any monster could kick your ass. Well, in the city, they had lines of NPCs slowly moving forward to be assigned jobs and, you know, establish the bulkhead or defend the lines or go out and explore and map or whatever. And I wasn't even really paying attention to that, just because I was like, okay, so NPCs are doing their NPC loop and they'll just walk off and disappear at some point, and, you know, standard fare. And I was just walking by, and one of the NPCs shouted, "Wait your turn, guys. An honest-to-God hero is here. They come to the front of the line." And I was blown away. I was like, wow, they're actually talking about me, and they know that, you know, these guys are kind of rank and file, but I've killed dragons. I've done this. I'm a hero. And I started, you know, that was basically kicking off a quest. But Warcraft was so alt-focused that the fifth time I came by, and that guy was like, "Holy shit, there's a hero here." Yeah, I'm not surprised anymore. I'm not impressed.
Right. The repetitive nature of the game, the on-rails nature became apparent eventually, even though they took great pains to make you feel special, right?
If you played one character, because I like to play one character, play the living shit out of it, and be done with it. If you played like that, it was a very solid game. But there was only so much to do. So when you made your third or fourth or fifth character, it really went downhill fast.
I will commend Blizzard for trying their best to... Let me qualify this by saying World of Warcraft isn't by no means a failure. It just doesn't deliver probably what I'm unrealistically expecting. But they have tried their best to work within the confines of a sort of, I guess, static narrative that must be static. The game has to unfold in a certain way, and it has to do that for every single player, or else that player feels like they've been deprived. Like, oh, you killed Arthas? Now I don't get to kill Arthas. Well, that sucks. Well, unless you're going to have a team of full-time writers and programmers who are going to keep spawning new villains, how else can you handle that in a game? Unless you've got a world that's totally dynamic, where things just, like, spawn, and the world's constantly changing such that if I go to the Frozen North in January, things are one way, but if we come back in June, they've completely changed. I don't know how you deliver what it is I'm looking for short of something like that.
Well, I think that is going to be the next step. That's what's going to be what keeps me playing the next MMO. Like, true dynamic. Like, even some of the things they can do with mob spawning and everything. You've killed all the orcs. All the orcs are dead. But the orcs were holding back the gnolls, so now gnolls are invading. I'd settle for something like that.
Yes, to the point where when I was in my graduate education years, I actually wrote some papers about that, like how, you know, ideas about how to improve things. Something as simple as that. The gnolls are gone, now the orcs move in. The orcs are gone, now the kobolds move in. Would change things up, because maybe the location itself doesn't change, but the circumstances there do. And I'm sure it's no trivial task to set up a world that operates that way, but nevertheless, that's what I want. And you know what? I can live without being the guy that kills Tiamat. I just want to be the guy who, with my friends, goes in and has my own unique adventures based solely on the fact that the world itself is dynamic and the way I'm playing is different from the way somebody else might play, you know?
I wish they'd almost be like tongue-in-cheek about it. Like, the first time somebody kills Tiamat, they could say, well, okay, Tiamat's dead, but, you know, there was this nice dragon den just going unused, and some other five-headed chromatic dragon decided to move in.
Right, there could be some repetition. As long as you couldn't set an egg timer by it, right? And that's what people did have done in other games. Like, they know exactly when this creature is going to spawn because that's when this creature resets. This creature is basically like a carnival-style haunted house creepy that comes jumping out at the appointed time, you know what I mean? And then it resets for the next person to experience.
I haven't played EverQuest since, like, 2003. I, to this day, remember some of the spawn timers. Finagol Atropolis was 72 hours plus or minus 12.
So they injected a little randomness there, but you knew if you camped out in that spot long enough, you would encounter that particular enemy.
I did it. That was for my epic quest. I spent months camping him.
I mean, there's a certain accomplishment to gathering, like, the cool gear by going through the motions of the game, but at this point, if loot is all I care about, I can get loot a lot easier. I hate to say it, I want, and this is a perfect segue, almost a second life. And I know we've wanted to talk about this, so let's talk about Second Life. Now, when I first heard about Second Life, I got excited. I think you did too. This seemed like a player-created setting where anything could happen, right?
Amen.
But what really happens in Second Life?
Well, I think this is what you're seeing to some degree in the other MMOs, which kind of ruin it for me. Once upon a time, Second Life was, here's a sandbox, build stuff, and do whatever you want. And people built cool weapons, and people built cool cars, and people built silly stuff. Like, there was a Garden of Eden set up where you could, like, eat an apple and go to hell and see what hell was like. And then someone said, you know what I really wish I could do with my Second Life? This place needs a swingers club. And that was the foot in the door. The next thing you know, there was a swingers club on every corner and, like, seedy bondage festivals. And there were zones that you needed, like, parental permission to even enter.
Now, I'm no prude. I'm hardly judgmental when it comes to sex. I think sexuality is part and parcel of what it is to be a human being. But really, that's all we could come up with? You were handed a world where anything is possible, and all you could come up with was that?
Not all you could come up with, but that's what people wanted, because those people made money.
My God, I mean, and there's really no diplomatic way for me to say this, but sex is part of the real world. You can have sex in the real world. You can do that.
Some people can.
Right. And there you go. That's the second part of my point. But then again, some people can't. And so they'll take it how they can get it in Second Life. And therefore, you have this proliferation of sex clubs and this expression of human sexuality. Not trying to shit on it, but I wanted Ready Player One. I wanted Second Life to be everything an MMORPG couldn't. I wanted to be able to, for it to be a gateway into a million portals, into a million people's imaginations, and it did not deliver. And I don't know if I really blame the game. I blame the population, and, you know, there's only so much technically that could be done at this point.
You know, I really think Ready Player One was one side of that story. That guy was, what, 16, 15? And even in that book, he bought the jack-off rig and lost, like, months of his time to just insane filling every pleasure he could have while the fate of the world rested in the balance. The reality of Ready Player One was it was just as bad as Second Life. He just didn't write that in the book.
Yeah, here's the thing. I understand the need for, again, sex and romance is something that's still in our culture dirty and to be not talked about. I understand that in any compelling virtual setting or given a compelling set of virtual reality or immersion tools, whatever you want to call them, that's going to be well represented just as it is on the internet, just as it has been in print, just as it has been in human culture throughout history. But I'd like to think that when you're, like, done living out whatever sexual fantasies you want, you can then enter a broader world where anything's possible. And if that was in the backdrop or hinted at in Ready Player One, hinted at was all I needed. It almost seems like no duh, there's going to be sex stuff. I get it. Let's move on. You know what I mean? Like, when all these virtual reality headsets come on, then it's only a matter of time before sexual content follows. let's assume that's going to be the case and move on. I mean, how are we going to give humanity a better experience, you know what I mean, than just that?
Staying on topic with Second Life, I think you just kind of made my argument for me. You're right. At some point, you've done like everything you can do in the real world, and it's ready, you know, this world, there can be anything. So you can have sex with that tree you've always wanted to. You can, there's lots of consenting dolphins in Second Life.
Oh, God. I hope that is not the extent of what we can come up with. I know I sound like the straight-laced, like, prude here when I say this, but I'm really trying to take up for the less base side of man, and I am a man, and I have a base side, but come on! Second Life, I bring it up because it's a perfect bridge topic, and it at once inspires and gives me almost no hope for the virtual reality future in which we will soon find ourselves. Within the next few years, we're probably all going to own our first VR headgear. The promise of the 1990s realized at last, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure all of us are going to, you know, then be with our 3D porn star of choice. But for the remaining 99% of life, you know, our entertainment life, let's say, what else can we do? And I'm hoping that I get that same rush that I got the first time I stepped into the world of Norrath, the first time I played EverQuest, the rush that came with stepping into an actual world, a boundless new world. And that's what I want. I want to be able to flip on my headset and enter this newly created, uncharted world. And I basically want to just be sucked into a virtual world, as I was with EverQuest. And it's probably naive of me to think that just because I'm experiencing it in virtual reality, it will somehow deliver something more than like Second Life has. But I'm really hopeful, man. What about you?
Well, I think I'm hopeful, and I think it's possible, because I think you need a game to do one thing really well that you can't do now in a game. Like, I think, going back to our example, being able to actually beat back the orcs, like being able to take land from the orcs and affect what happens. You know what? The orcs really knew how to grow wheat, so now people are going hungry. Or something stupid like that. That's going to be what really fascinates me and interests me in a game. Because I've seen single-player games like that. There's a great game. It's a crap game, but it was fun. Two Worlds for 360. I don't know if it was for PlayStation 3 or not. But
yes.
I was sent to one town, and there was a huge orc army besieging the town. And everyone, you know, oh my god, you're a hero, please go kill the orcs, blah, blah, blah. And I just didn't want to. I was on a quest. I needed to get so-and-so. So I went to the altar, and they said, yeah, so-and-so's buried beneath the ground, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out that the so-and-so was projecting this evil energy onto the town, which was the only thing keeping the huge orc army out of it. So as soon as I touched it, that force went away, and the orcs invaded. And by the time I got out of the dungeon, it was an orc town, and there were just bodies everywhere.
Wow.
That's going to be hard to do in an MMO, but something along those lines, where this town doesn't have a boat anymore because the orcs sunk it. No one's built a new boat. You can't travel the Ocean of Tears. Sorry, dude.
You know, we might be approaching a confluence of technologies so that such a thing is not that far out of the realm of possibility. Imagine, so you don't really need the virtual reality for this, but I think it just makes it that much more compelling. You're in this virtual world. You're in the town. The orcs invade. But the orcs aren't just like mindless like NPCs walking around. A degree of artificial intelligence has been imparted such that they have kind of like behaviors and personalities. You're in an orc town. Like this is, you know what I mean? Like you now have to interact with these orcs, be that fighting them or what have you. That wouldn't necessarily have to be a scripted event in a truly dynamic world where, of course, once the force field's down, the orcs will invade. That could just come about as a result of circumstances, right?
Yeah. Kanos, going back to EverQuest, no one hung out at Kanos because it was so far out of the way. Well, eventually, if none of the heroes hang out in town to keep the gnoll population down, well, the gnolls win and just take over the town.
Right. Or, like, brigands take over and, like, all the goods become more expensive. Or, you know what I mean? Anything could happen. And this isn't to say that GMs or directors or whoever couldn't intervene, like couldn't observe, like, you know, nobody's been in this town for a while, let's monkey with it and then take direct action. But yeah, why would that not happen? You know what I mean? And that's what I'm saying. Really, any of those things. Basically, if you were to slap VR on an existing MMORPG, it would suck me into a certain extent. I don't think that's the silver bullet. I think the dynamic aspects we're talking about is what's really going to suck me back in. And why would you ever quit playing a game like that? It would just change and change and change, and your character would grow and grow and evolve, and then maybe eventually die, and a new character would start up, that sort of thing. Like, why would you stop playing a game that just truly never ended? Like, there was no end game, so to speak.
I think you know my paranoia about addiction, and I probably wouldn't stop playing that game ever.
Well, then that gets into some really philosophical questions about virtual reality. If you're not hurting anybody really on the outside and you're taking care of your basic needs, why does it hurt anybody for you to be strapped in nonstop? I'm sure there are going to be health ramifications, but if you're not hurting anyone besides yourself, why not become addicted to a virtual reality that's sweeter than this one?
The only reason I can come up with is your earlier argument that there has to be something better than sex. Like, there has to be something with more meaning than just pleasure, 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 pleasure. Hopefully enough people feel like that to keep the power grid on. Because I don't.
Yeah. I'm optimistic. I draw inspiration from entertainment, as I'm sure you do. And I think lessons learned or experiences had in a virtual world can inspire you in the real world. Like, I think the real world has a lot to offer us, not least of which is maybe even having a hand in the creation or enhancement or maintenance of virtual worlds and virtual spaces in which people can exist and interact. Would not some sort of role for yourself in the real world that complemented virtual reality appeal to you? You couldn't see that being the case?
We're probably getting a little philosophical here. I think so many people believe that there's so many of us that one person can't really stand out. Or that you cannot stand out in one generation. You had to, you know, your father has to be a millionaire for you to mean anything or something like that. I think so many people believe that these days that it's just much easier to seek in this MMO where the world didn't begin until like Tuesday morning.
You know, I do see your point. I see these sorts of spaces being a refuge for, and I don't want to sound like conceited or anything here, but the mediocre and the lazy and the unmotivated. But for every 100 or 1,000 of those people, I see one mover and shaker similar to the protagonist from Ready Player One, right? I mean, he stood out from the crowd. In that world, and in that world, of course, VR was a real refuge because the environmental degradation and so on had just ruined the actual planet, if I remember correctly. But
I'll say again, I don't think we're far off from that level of escapism in our real world.
Okay, so that's another point. My original being that that guy stood out in that world. But another point is maybe having compelling worlds people can escape to that only require data, so you do have the energy demands of maintaining the infrastructure to run these virtual worlds. But apart from that, these worlds don't have quite the environmental impact the real one does. So if people can experience a lot of things in these virtual worlds at minimal carbon footprint, maybe we're kind of saving the real world by inducing presence in these kind of zero-sum virtual worlds.
I felt this way in high school, and I don't necessarily feel this way in the real world, but your question makes me question it. I felt in high school that a lot of people should just be allowed to skip whenever they wanted, so that I could actually learn something.
Yes, 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 yes. That's where my mind was going as well, Brian, actually, as we were discussing this.
So maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing to just admit you're not really going to accomplish a whole lot. Go, go play WoW.
You know something? The notion of walking down a normally busy city street and having 90% of the Nimrods out there jacked into the virtual net so that they are not bothering me would give me a decided the world is my oyster feel. There I would be kind of a master of this sparsely populated world, perhaps helping run the virtual world where most people live. I think that might not be that bad, to be truthful.
Think of the carbon footprint.
Minimal, right? Oh, I'm digging it. Brian, we have to do our part. We have to do our part to bring about the EverQuest of the future, the virtual addicting EverQuest of the future, so that 90% of the people just live there and then we can have the real world. Wow. The real world ramifications are intriguing. Let's admit that. So, okay, it sounds like we kind of have the foundations for a VR-dominated future wherein the non-virtual world is a lot more quiet and less put upon by humanity. Let's kind of talk about how we get there. Generally, of course, we can't predict even the near future, but are you seeing some more compelling MMORPGs coming out, some more compelling VR experiences coming out in the next few years? As sort of the first step towards a future like this?
Well, the VR is making interesting inroads with the glasses, and I'm sure haptic feedback will be a thing right after the glasses. So I really think we're on the road to something like that. And I you've probably heard me talk about like my opinions on the holodecks and everything. 20 years, I think we'll have, you know, rooms in our houses devoted towards virtual reality. And it won't even necessarily be like entertainment or anything like that. You'll be able to step into a room and make a phone call and your grandma will be standing in front of you. Hi, honey, how's it going? Or whatever. I just think we'll be there. I'm really excited by that. As for not 20 years down the road, the games we play, I don't trust the consumer to use what they're given responsibly, because once upon a time, I was so super excited about EverQuest Next and your ability to build cities and towns and fortresses and walls for defense and all that kind of stuff. Just went right out the window as soon as I saw someone put a QR code to their website for recruitment on the wall they built.
Gosh, yeah. So you can't actually account for taste or for what people's poor taste is going to lead them to do, right?
Yeah, that's just, I mean, and that's not even talking about the dick rockets and things like that. I mean,
yes, that really, really fit in a high fantasy setting.
Real world injections, what's going to kill those things for me?
Yeah, I'm hopeful that, and geez, I'm using all of the technology buzzwords here, but I'm hoping that maybe through some variation of on-demand resources, like cloud resources, you'll be able to just like spool up your own instance of a world. And no, this is my instance. These are my rules. This is high fantasy. We're here to play high fantasy. The dick missiles and QR codes and Red Wing scores can stay outside, or you'll get the boot. I mean, that's what I hope.
Maybe that's why we still pay money to gather around someone else's table every Thursday night.
Well, you know something? That's a good point. Our game night, which takes place at the Dragon's Lair in the Adventure Game Store, is kind of our spooling up our own little instance of our favorite game and playing it with people who we want to be there. Right now, because of the nature of MMORPGs, everything is maintained from a central authority and everybody shares, and that central authority determines who can and can't play. Imagine a certain pricing tier where you spin up your own instance of EverQuest Next, you license it, maybe you pay for your own hosting, who knows, it could happen in a million ways, or you know, EverQuest VR Next, however far in the future you want to take this, and it's yours to do with as you want, no programming required, just flip the switch and you and your like-minded friends fund it. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So there you go, let's add that to the confluence of technologies, the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, abstracting away of actual computing hardware to this sort of, I guess it is just a cloud. I guess maybe virtualization is more what I'm looking for than cloud computing in this case, where basically I need this much horsepower. This is how much it costs. I'm going to rent it. I'm going to spool up my EverQuest Next instance in it. And that's that. I think that might be kind of cool. So assuming we get past the dick missile phase, let's say 5 to 10 years before the VR or the virtual room or the virtual headset becomes a standard part of the American household. The first world household, should I say, to expand it to a broader audience. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, probably. Hopefully.
I think these things could work wonders in disadvantaged countries where students could now like attend lectures at MIT as if they were there. But we could do a social crusading episode some other time. 20, 30 years down the road, where are we at? I mean, is there a global spanning virtual net where you can actually navigate as you would today with websites from realm to realm, from world to world, from Angel Fire homepage to Angel Fire homepage? Has VR replaced television, movies, etc.?
It has for me. I mean, I'm not really sure if I can speak for the world at large, but God, when was the last time you watched, like, oh, it's 9 p.m., let me sit down and watch this show that only comes on once a week?
Right, so appointment television, as they call it, is a thing of the past. So is passive entertainment going to be less appealing once you can take an active part? I mean, you can do that now with video games, but it's not quite the same. You're still kind of reading someone's book at their pace, whereas with the VR setting, you are in the book, you know?
Oh.
Could be interesting. And, you know, I never really thought about mass entertainment. What does this portend for movie theaters? I mean, do I really want to share my virtual experience with 30 other people, 80 other people, 100, however many a theater holds?
I've got to tell you, I am just amazed that movie theaters still exist as it is. I can't imagine what's going to happen when we have VR.
Well, their edge and is the experience. You get to go out. You sit in a comfortable chair. Now a lot of them have the in-seat dining. The screen is there. The sound is there. They provide a superior experience to what you can get at home. And they have content that they get before anybody else. That's their real trump card.
I very rarely call being subjected to the populace at large superior.
Okay, so you are a prime consumer of VR in which you do not have to interact with the public at large, and you decide the conditions with which you interact with others. Using an avatar, probably.
If I could go to some place like AGS for movie night or something, I would. But, you know, 700-800 total strangers and have to yell at the screen. And Jesus Christ, I went to a theater a couple of years ago and somebody pulled out a pistol because he didn't like the ending. Like,
man, now you've painted a picture of a sort of self-segregating future where, like, people become more isolated. Like, you and I want to watch a movie, and we want to watch it with Brian Dalrymple from the Adventure Game Store. So we warp over to his virtual Adventure Game Store in his virtual Dragon's Lair, right? And we watch the movie together in that setting, in kind of a virtual reality, and forget the rest of the world, right?
Didn't Xbox 360 do something like that?
They did. They had this, I think it was the Netflix thing. Basically, in any movie viewing apps, your party could just sit there and view together. Your little avatars were sitting in a theater. They did. They did have something like that. And, it gets back to that whole spinning up virtual resources. You spin up your own theater, complete with your own moviegoers, whenever you want.
I'm surprised I didn't use that more often.
Yeah, me too, actually. Gosh, I think... The more I think about it, man, this is compelling online content, the ability to experience any content anywhere you want, and especially to experience it in a reality of your choosing. It's going to have – we started just kind of seeking the next MMORPG, but this is going to, like, change society, man.
And lower the carbon footprint.
That's the selling point. We'll start – you have to start publishing. Well, while you're sitting with your VR – rig plugged in at home, you're not burning this much carbon doing X, Y, and Z. And since we will then perfect, add one more stream to the confluence. Since we will have perfected renewable electricity generation by then, such that solar and wind will account for more of our energy mix, we won't be generating carbon that way. We'll be doing less driving. It's great. This works out for the environment and it works out for us. The virtual reality future is going to save the world, my man. So, final question for you. It's as we to add yet another stream to the confluence. We know that the singularity is around the corner, and of course, we're going to be able to live for hundreds of years because of all of these advanced medical technologies that are going to save us from death, right? Wink, wink.
Looking likely.
I don't have faith that it's going to happen, but if it does, I'll take it.
I think people our age will have the potential for immortality. I don't think it'll be commonplace, but I think it'll be an option.
I hope you're not wrong. I'll take 200. I'll take 200 relatively healthy years, but immortality sounds nice too. Let's talk about immortality, and this gets to my final question. Let's say you've reached the end of your 250-year natural lifespan, and you're plugged into your VR machine. The future equivalent of hospice is not them doping you out of your mind. It's them completely dampening your physical senses, and you're aware you're in the virtual reality, and you're aware that your physical body's dying. And so finally, you and your family are all sitting in a room, and a doctor comes in and sits down, and she's like, Brian, okay, you've reached the end of your natural life. We can't sustain your body any longer. We need your final wishes. Do you want to just keep on here once your body dies? And you'll know because the little Logan's Run-style gem in your hand turns red when that happens. Would you like to just keep on here living, or would you like for the lights to just kind of go out? Would you like to die in the virtual world as you die in the physical world? Would you want to confront that choice? And what would your answer be? Or do you even know?
I don't think I know my answer. I kind of do believe in like the cycle, like, you know, you get your time and then you're done. But no, I'd probably just like unjack and fade away. I don't know if I could be around. I don't know if I could put up with Gandalf's forever.
But remember, this is this highly customized, self-segregated future. So hopefully I'm still there and I'm hanging out with all your loved ones and friends. And I'm like, hey, dude, this is between you and your doctor. But, I was thinking maybe we could go play EverQuest later. So if you just don't die, we can go do that.
Yeah.
Because I'm already jacked in. I'm staying here forever until they can put me back into a healthy body. So what do you say? I understand, like, you might tire of life eventually. But right now, I have a hard time believing that you would say no. Like, things are fine in the virtual world. There's no pain. You know what's up. You're not being deluded. It's not a Vanilla Sky-style scenario where you don't know you're in virtual reality. You just know that, like, all right, this is it, man. I mean, it can't go back to the real world for a while, maybe forever. And then that's it. You just walk out of the doctor's office. She bids you good day, and you continue on with your virtual life. I don't know. That's... For me, it seems like a no-brainer, yes, but you might have a deeper philosophical concerns than I have.
No, I'd probably go with it, too.
Yes, I convinced you.
Especially if at some point you could just undo it.
Well, yeah, I think that you can go back to your doctor and she could just put you down. That's another ethical can of worms. Can you suicide in the virtual world? Can you, like, turn off your... back, can you, like, erase your backups and just turn yourself off? Can you go into stasis and be revived later? I mean, and then you get into the nature of consciousness. I'm hand-waving all that away and just assuming that your consciousness and the you that is you transfers into the virtual world. But, yeah, ethics would come into play there. Wow. Okay, so on that deeply philosophical note, I think this little conversation about what was originally EverQuest and the next EverQuest for us has wrapped up, man. Anything else, or you think we're done?
Think we're done.
Cool, man. I'm about to jack into the VR world, so I'll see you there.
See you in a bit.
Oh, but before we jack into the VR world, we should probably leave some helpful instructions for those left here in the real world. Those helpful instructions would include subscribing to us on iTunes, rating us favorably, checking us out on Stitcher if you prefer a streaming solution. Am I missing anything? Oh, drop us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com. And of course, check out our soon-to-be new and improved website at nerdstravaganza.com. And Brian, I think you have some social media tips for our soon-to-be orphaned users before we jack into the VR.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus want us on Google+, and go LFG in our super secret nerd society, Nerdstravaganza HQ on Facebook.
LFG, how absolutely appropriate.
I try.
You succeed. All right, we are out of here. By the way, folks, 7.